All right, Exodus chapter 18, verses 1 through 27 is what we'll be looking at tonight. Tonight we're going to look at some wise counsel, and we're going to be talking about a guy named Jethro, not to be confused with the Beverly Hillbillies. But this Jethro is going to give some wise counsel, and we're going to see what his advice is. Now, just make sure everybody's caught up with where we are. We've come out of Egypt. God has brought the children of Israel out. He sent the plagues and triumphed over all the gods of Egypt. He showed both Israel and Egypt, and as well as all the world, that He is Jehovah. He is Yahweh, the Lord. And that these other gods have no power. They have no way to answer. They have no way to protect or no way to deliver from anything. And so he showed that he was the true and living God, and that there was no other God but him. And he showed that the last little triumph that we saw was when he slew the most powerful man in the world at that time, and one of the most powerful armies in that time. He slew them all in the Red Sea with just the the waters rushing back that he had parted for the Israelites. And so we have seen that triumph over Egypt, and of course, symbolically, that shows God's triumph over sin. If you haven't caught up with this yet, there are some great symbolics that we've in some of the things we've looked at already. Egypt represents, as far as representation is concerned, is a picture of sin and the bondage that that mankind is in to sin. Of course, the Israelites were bound in that sin. They were in bondage. They were in slavery. Pharaoh is, of course, I believe, a type of Satan, and of course, his influence and power in the world. And then we have Moses, who comes in, and he is sent as a deliverer, as God's spokesman, and he brings them out of Egypt. Of course, God's the one bringing them out, but Moses is the deliverer. And so there's just a lot of beautiful, beautiful pictures that we see through the deliverance, how God brought, redeemed Israel and brought them out of Egypt. And of course, we have that beautiful picture of Christ in the Passover itself, where the lamb was slain and he was perfect and without blemish and not a bone broken. And that, of course, when they applied the blood, then they were passed over and they were redeemed, but the rest saw destruction come to their houses. And so, like I said, some very beautiful pictures. There's even some pictures, I believe, probably in the crossing of the Red Sea, and as it pertains to the Christian life as well. And we're going to see more and more of this kind of stuff as we go along. But nevertheless, after they got over the Red Sea through the Red Sea, and they came over on the other side, they began, of course, making some travels. And I love the way that this was put. I heard this last year or so, but the first several chapters of Exodus is God getting Israel out of Egypt. And the rest of the book is about God getting Egypt out of Israel. And because they had a lot of their ways, a lot of their traditions that were just, still in their minds. The paganism, just the culture and those types of things. The next several years was God getting that stuff out of them. We would call that sanctification. After Christ saves us, the rest of our Christian life is Him sanctifying us, getting the world and the world's ways and the world's thoughts and the world's philosophies, things like that, getting that out of us and making us kingdom people. And so, that's very much what God is doing in the rest of the book of Exodus. And so it starts with some trials. And what God does is He throws them out in the middle of the desert with no water and no food. And so we've seen a couple times where they've, in a sense, at the end of the rope, and they have no idea how they're going to make it. How are they going to get water? And so they cry out to Moses, of course, begin murmuring and complaining, but God provides each time. He provided water at Marah, where the water was bitter, and He gave sweet water there. He provided food by giving manna from heaven, and of course He's going to do this until they cross the Jordan River over into Israel. And then, of course, they got a little bit further out in the desert and ran out of water again. So what did God do that time? That's what we looked at last. He gave water out of the most unsensible place ever. And he told Moses, go hit that rock. And so Moses struck the rock, and and water gushed forth from the rock, enough to water 2 million people there in the desert. And so God has provided every single time. He's done it in some strange ways, but I believe that's to show that that this could be done by no one else but God. It wasn't Moses providing the water. It wasn't just the environment or the world providing the water. This was God. It was God's provision, and God was the one to take care of them. And so they're going to have many other issues like that where God's going to provide, and we'll see that as we go along. But nevertheless, here we are in Exodus chapter 18. And they've been in the desert now for at least a little while. And Moses is the leader of a group, like I said, that the population is somewhere at least around 2 million people total. Not to mention all the cattle and, you know, the other stuff that's going on. So we have personal property. We have, of course, foreigners that have come with them, strangers from the land of Egypt that left out with them. And so we have those kind of people in the land. We have sinners. You know, a group full of 2 million sinners. And when you have sinners, property, and strangers, guess what you're going to have? You're going to have disputes, aren't you? There's going to be problems. And those problems, somebody's got a rule on these problems. And so they needed someone, of course, to decide, you know, if there's any disputes. Let's say this cow dies, you know, and it's somebody else's fault. Or maybe this cow was with this herd, and now all of a sudden it's over here. And so there's some kind of civil dispute over what's going on. Someone steals something. Someone gets murdered. There's an argument between these people. Well, they have to have someone to go to settle all these differences. It couldn't be the Wild West where everybody just, you know, just took care of their own issues. I mean, there had to be form. There had to be government. There had to be a way to solve the different issues that came through. And so what we find is that the brunt of that burden was placed upon Moses, that he was the one. Moses was the one that was deciding these cases and dealing with these situations for 2 million people. How many people do you know, does anybody know what the total of people are, the total population of the Orlando area? Not just the city of Orlando, but the surrounding areas. Anybody with an idea on that? It's pretty close to, yeah, around that. And so multiply that by two, and that's how many people were wandering around in the wilderness. How much crime do we find here in Orlando? It may not have been the same situation, but there's a lot of crime just in this area. And so just imagine, I mean, there were things going on. We can't just assume that there was just peace and everything was just hunky-dory as they traveled out through the wilderness. I mean, you gotta know that there were some things that were going on. There were definitely some disputes and some crimes and civil matters that were coming up. And so Moses was the one man that was dealing with all of those issues that were going on. And so we're going to see some wise counsel that was given to him from his father-in-law today. Let's go ahead and let's look in our verses here, Exodus chapter 18. We're going to see a family reunion, first of all, here in verses 1 through 7. Now, we haven't heard a whole lot about Moses' family up until this point, and so we see his family revealed, some of their names and some things about them here in the first couple of four verses here. It says, "When Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, and that the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt, then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back." Now, just a couple things I want us to keep in mind here. First of all, when Moses left Egypt, where did he go? The first time that he left Egypt, when he ran away. He went to Midian, right. And in Midian, which is modern-day Saudi Arabia now, in Midian he met Zipporah. And of course, he met her family and everything. He married her. Well, when he went to take care of the issues that were going on in Egypt, he obviously sent Zipporah and his children, sent them back to her father, to his father-in-law. And they had been staying in Midian with the family. And so now we know that that Israel has crossed the Red Sea. And where did they cross the Red Sea and head into? They've gone right back into Midian, right? And so now they're approaching home. They've gone deeper into that area. And so Jethro hears word that they've crossed back over, that the people of Israel have come out of Egypt. They're over there in the land. And so he goes and he meets them to reunite Moses and his wife and his sons. And so this is what we're finding here. You know, basically he just gets word and he goes out and they have their meeting and they're able to be reconnected, Moses and his family. Now it says in verse 3, it says, "And her two sons, of which the name of one was Gershom, for he said, I have been an alien in a strange land." What does alien mean? He's a foreigner. What was the strange land? For him, it would have been Midian, because that's where he found his wife and where he stayed for the next 40 years. And so his first son was called Gershom, and which means probably somewhere around the meaning of a foreigner or something like that. And as he said, he called him that because he was an alien or a foreigner in a strange land. It says the name of the other was Eliezer, for the God of my father, said he, was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. And so both of the names of his son reflected his recent past at the time, the fact that he had found a new home in a strange land, and the fact that he had escaped the sword of Pharaoh, who was after his life at the time. Now, let's keep in mind that when it says they're two sons, how old are their two sons? We're probably imagining little boys running around, but Moses is 80 years old at this time, and so his sons are probably closer to 40, or you know, somewhere around that area. So we're not talking about little boys running around, you know, under their mama's skirt tail. We're talking about grown men who perhaps even have families of their own at this time. And so anyway, just keep that in mind as we continue to go on here. It says in verse 5, it says, "And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wives unto Moses in the wilderness, where he encamped at the Mount of God." Now, where was the Mount of God? Mount Sinai, also called Mount Horeb, which is where the burning bush was, and it's where Moses is later going to receive the Ten Commandments in a later chapter. Now, it says in verse 6, "And he said unto Moses, I, thy father-in-law Jethro, am come unto thee, and thy wife, and her two sons with her. And Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, and did obeisance, and kissed him. And they asked each other of their welfare, and they came into the tent." And so we can imagine here the children of Israel are at Mount Sinai at this time, and that's where the Rock of Horeb is. It's over at that place as well, where the water split, you know, water began to gush out. And so the nation of Israel is camped there around Mount Sinai. Jethro hears of this. He comes over and he meets the family, and it says that when Moses saw them, that he ran out to his father-in-law, ran out to them, and it says he did obeisance. What does that mean? He fell down before him. And I think it says here that he kissed him, which was a greeting, but also, of course, their family. And so I'm sure there's some hugging and kissing going on. It says, "And they asked each other of the welfare, how you been doing, you know, that kind of thing." And just went through the whole story of everything that had been going on. It says, "And they came into the tent." So we really do have a family reunion that's going on here. They just take a day or so to sit in the tent and sit around the table with one another. I'm sure shared many meals and talked of all the things that have been going on, both in his son's life and also the things that God had been doing for Moses and Israel over the last little while. And we're actually going to see some of that discussion here in just a moment. But we see this family reunited, and they're able to once again be together. And I know that was a great blessing for Moses being out there in the wilderness and doing this ministry that God had called him to. We see there in verses 8 through 12, we have some family worship that's going on. And not only did they just fellowship, but they began to worship God as well and praising Him, thanking Him for all that was done. We see the journey recounted in verse 8. It says, "And Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done unto Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and all the travail that had come up upon them by the way, and how the Lord delivered them." Now, the things that had come upon them were both issues of provision and issues of warfare. If you remember, they had done without water and food, and God provided for them in those times. But there was also something else that happened in the last lesson. Anybody remember what that was? They got attacked. Y'all with me? Y'all remember that? And how did God get victory? Were y'all asleep last? That was two Wednesdays ago, I know, memory. Yeah. Brother Hall. Right, yeah. And if his hands came down, they started losing. If his hands went up, of course, what did he have in his hands? We talked about that. Would have had the rod in his hands. And so as his hands went up, you know, they won the battle. If his hands went down, they began losing. So that he had two guys that actually helped him prop his hands up, hold his hands up until the battle was won. And so he recounted all those stories to Jethro here in verse 8. We see Jethro rejoicing in verses 9 through 11. It says, "And Jethro rejoiced for all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel, whom he had delivered out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Jethro said, Blessed be the Lord," that word there again, Jehovah or Yahweh, "blessed be the Lord who has delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of Pharaoh, who hath delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians." Now I love verse 11. It says, "Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods. For in the thing wherein they dealt proudly, he was above them." Now, as we're reading these verses, we have to go back to Egypt for just a moment and think about what he says here in verse 11. He says, "The thing wherein they dealt proudly, he was above them." Let's remember that Egypt at the time was the most powerful and if not the most wealthy, one of the most wealthy nations in all the world, all the known world at that time. And so they had, of course, all these multiple gods we talked about. I mean, they had over 50, I've even heard numbers as high as thousands of gods that they worshiped there in Egypt. And so they had all these gods, and you can imagine them boasting. You know, we have great soil, and we're able to bring great produce, and we have great treasures here in Egypt. And they had all the pyramids and all the wonders of Egypt and all those things that were going on. And Jethro says, "Now I know that the Lord, the Lord of Israel, that he is above all gods. For the things that Egypt was triumphing in, the things that they were bragging about, the Lord has shown himself above all of those things." You see, the gods of Egypt had no power to give or to protect all the things that Egypt had to be bragging about. But the Lord had given triumph to Israel over all of them. It says, "In those things that they dealt proudly, he was above them." We find as we continue on in verse 12. We see, "And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God. And Aaron came and all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God." And so there was an offering, there was worship that was rendered to God in Jethro's behalf, or by Jethro. And so we see this family time of worship. Even Aaron and some of the priests came in and enjoyed this time of fellowship and worship with Moses' family. Now, this leads us to the last section, and this is where we'll spend a little bit more time tonight. But we see the fatherly advice that's given to Moses in verses 13 through 27. Now, as we look at the first several verses here, we see the weight of leadership, that had been placed on Moses' shoulders. In verse 13, we find the problem. It says, "And it came to pass on the morrow," the next day, "that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood by Moses from the morning unto the evening." And so the next day they wake up, and they've had this great time of family reunion and fellowship and all this. The next morning they get up, and maybe Jethro looks around and he says, "Where's Moses?" And his wife says, "Oh, well, I think he went out." And he asks around, and they said, "Well, he's sitting at the judgment seat." And so perhaps he goes out and just observe what's going on. And so he watches Moses, and from the morning all day long till the evening, it says, from the time he woke up to the time he went to bed, Moses was sitting on the judgment seat, and all the people were bringing their cases to Moses for him to give counsel or advice on what to be done. Or really, not just advice, but to give judgment on the things, you know, the different civil matters and things like that had come across. And so we find this in verse 13, that from morning until evening, that the people stood before him and he was to give judgment to them. Now it says in verse 14, Moses' father-in-law asked a question. It says, "When Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, What is this thing that thou doest to the people? Why sittest thou thyself alone, and all the people stand by thee from morning unto even?" And Moses said unto his father-in-law, "Because the people come unto me to inquire of God." Now Moses is God's spokesperson. Moses is not only the spiritual leader of the nation of Israel at this time, but he is also the governmental leader. I mean, he is the legislation system at the time. I mean, when people want to know, what do we do about this or that matter, he was the one that they had to come to. And so, you know, this wasn't a strange thing to Moses. I mean, they had evidently been doing this since day one. And so his father-in-law just comes to him and says, "Moses, what are you doing? Why are all these people coming to you for their problems?" You know, why are you the one that is bearing all this weight on your shoulders? And he says, well, I mean, that's just how we've been doing things. And it says in verse 16, it says, when they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between the one and the other, and I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws. Now, part of the reason why Moses had the brunt of this on his shoulders was because he was the one who knew the commandments of God. He was the one that had been speaking with God and you know, knew what the laws were, you know, to some degree at this time anyway. And so he was the one in Egypt, or in Israel, excuse me, who knew the answers to these questions of the law and question of what is right and wrong. And so it all fell on him, and he was the one to deal with each matter that was brought before him. Now we find in verse 17 through 18 that Jethro gives some counsel here. It says, and Moses' father-in-law said unto him, the thing that thou doest is not good. Now there's a couple reasons why this wasn't good. First of all, this was not healthy for Moses. Okay, and there's a couple reasons why this was not healthy. Number one, no one man needs all of that weight on him alone. Second of all, no one man needs all that power in himself alone. The power tempts to take over, tempts, you know, to overthrow what, you know, and just have your own will done. And I don't know that Moses was under that direct, you know, temptation himself, but Moses wasn't going to live forever. And so if his predecessor, Joshua, was placed in that same position where all the answers were, you know, that were being dealt out had to come from him, it just creates a sovereign power in Israel that doesn't need to be there. And so, you know, like I said, there's a couple of reasons why this was not a good thing that was going on. Verse 18, it says, thou wilt surely wear away, both thou and this people that is with thee, for this thing is too heavy for thee, thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. He says, you will surely wear away. What does that mean? This is going to wear you out, right? Moses, you can't do this. This is too much for any one person to handle alone. Now, he says in verse 19, hearken now unto my voice, and I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein thou they must walk, and the work that they must do. And that leads us over into this next section here. We find this wisdom of leadership that Moses' father-in-law passes down to him. I find this very encouraging that Moses did not say, well, you know, when God puts you in my position, then you can give me advice on, you know, he doesn't act this way. He listens to the advice that's given. He listens to this wise counsel, and he begins to incorporate it. Now, his father-in-law evidently was a pretty wise guy. You know, he had some wisdom himself, but I believe personally that this wisdom was coming from God. That God laid this on Jethro's heart, and Jethro was just passing along the news to Moses. And so we see the wisdom here. Now, first of all, he tells him to seek out leaders. Moses is, like I said, he is the man as far as human the human side is concerned. He is the man in Israel at this moment. And so he tells him, seek out some leaders in verses 19 through 21. And we've read some of that, but he says, first of all, he says, call out some men in verse 19 that they may bring the call. He says, teach them ordinances, excuse me, verse 20, teach them the ordinances and laws, show them the way that they must walk, and teach them the work that they are to do. And so what he tells Moses to do is, he says, Moses, you have all the knowledge right now. You're the one who has this. But he says, call out some leaders and set them in some different, and bring them to yourself and teach them the law that you know. Teach them what they need to know. Teach them how to judge between civil matters. In other words, what we're talking about is a leadership training session that he's telling Moses to have these people. Bring them to yourself, train them in leadership, and then he says to disperse the load, spread the load, as we continue reading in verse 21. It says, moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them. And so the men that he was to train, there are some qualifications here. He just didn't pick out the guys he liked or the ones that looked the strongest or he thought had the best leadership skills. But he says, pull out men who, number one, are able, men who fear God, men who are truthful, men who are not covetous, and place them over the people. This sounds a whole lot like something we find over in the book of Acts. Anybody remember that? The apostles had a lot of weight on them as well. And the Holy Spirit, you know, in council told them to do some things as well. Who did he say to set aside? He said, set aside some deacons. But he didn't say just pick out some men. He said men who are full of the Holy Spirit, who are full of wisdom, and they have these good qualities about them. And he says, and place those over the dispersion of the food that in the book of Acts. Well, here we find much of the same thing. He would find some very godly men, some truthful men, upstanding citizens, and to place them in leadership over the people. Now it says, as we continue reading verse 21, it says to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds and rulers of fifties and rulers of tens. Now we have 2 million people. And so what Jethro, in just this little bit of counsel that he's given, he has set up a system, you know, where if there's a group of 10 men here and they have a problem, they have somebody to go to. If this guy can't handle it, then he goes to the one that's over 100 men. If the guy over 100 men, if he can't handle the situation, he goes to the one that's over 1,000. And if this guy can't handle it, then he goes to Moses, and Moses can pass the word on down. But what happens is he's put a cushion between the common issues that are going on in the land. He's putting a cushion between them and himself. And that way, you know, as he teaches these leaders, as he teaches them, this is what you do in these situations, this is how this ought to be done, then they're able to take care of these matters. And then it says if there is anything, any great big matter, any really important matter, then they would take that to Moses as well. But what he's done is he has spread the load, and that's going to make it a whole lot easier for Moses to lead these people and to be able to take care of all the situations that come up. It says in verse 22, and let them judge the people at all seasons. What that means is all times. All times, let them judge. And it shall be that every great matter they'll bring unto you, but every small matter they will judge. So it shall be easier for thyself that they shall bear the burden with thee. I can't help, as I was going through this, I can't help, you know, but think about the pastors, you know, and their leadership position as far as the spiritual things. And listen, I mean, even though we do have deacons, things like that, you need to know that he still has to deal with both of those things, both of those issues at some degree. And in a church full of however many people, I mean, it doesn't matter what the population is, be a small church, be a big church, there's going to be problems and there's going to be matters that have to be dealt with. And what we have seen in the past several years, I'm not sure when this got started, we definitely don't see it in Paul's day, we don't see it in the Apostles' day, but somewhere along the line, pastors have become lone rangers. And they have become the sole leader in the church. And all issues are brought to the pastor, and he is the one that is responsible for, you know, for all those things being taken care of. And you say, well, that's a pastor position. He ought to do that. I want you to look around today at how many churches don't have pastors. And the reason why a majority of those churches don't have pastors is because the pastors burn out. Wait, did Jethro just say that to Moses? Did he say, if you don't spread the load, you're going to wear out because you can't handle it all on your own? And what we have is somewhere, I don't know if it was taught in the seminaries, I don't know what happened, but you know, the pastors, like I said, have got this lone ranger mentality, and the churches expect that. They expect him to be the one in the church, the go-to with all the issues. And the truth is this is not me preaching on y'all. I just want you to understand, this is just the truth that I'm just relaying, okay? And so I'm not, you know, pitting anything here. I just want you to see here how this works. It works in any church, in every church. And you know, the thing is that the pastor was never intended to have all that weight on his shoulder. As a matter of fact, in the apostles' days and in Paul's days, we find several elders in the churches. We find several leaders in the churches. Paul didn't travel around by himself. Paul had a whole team of people. And those people were trained. They were trained in leadership. They were trained in evangelism and all those different areas. And they helped to spread the burden, spread the load of the weight that's carried. Now, in this situation with Moses, was he ultimately responsible for the things that happened in the levels lower than him? Well, absolutely. He was the leader Okay? And so he didn't lose his position of responsibility. And listen, he had to answer to God at a higher level than any of those other leaders did as well. He was still in the leadership position. He was still responsible for everything. But at the same time, all the weight was not placed upon him because he had trained leaders and the load was spread. Well, the same is true with a pastor. You know, if a pastor has a staff that he's working with, or even if it's not a paid staff but just a group of leaders that that God has led him to, that he has said, I would like you to take care of this area, take care of this department of the church, take care of this department. If you have any big issues, come to me. But if you can handle them things on your own, then do that, right? And say, and give them those positions to where they can take care of the youth, or they can take care of RU, or they can take care of Grow, or they can take care of this or that. And now I might be saying that, yeah, praise the Lord, send some people to do some of this stuff. But I'm saying if you have someone over those different areas, yes, the pastor is ultimately responsible, but then the load is spread and it's easier to take care of. Right now, many of you already know this. I mean, this is not griping. It's just something that we have discussed before. But right now, we're just in a situation where a lot of that is on me, and I have to pray for strength every day. You know, for God to help me, to give me wisdom, and help me to be able to diversify and do everything I need to do. But this is something we need to be praying for: is for God to send either some lay leaders or to send some help. You know, in some of these areas. I don't feel at all that we need to let any of these go. And these are all things that I feel are God-led that we need to be involved with. But we just need to pray. I've been telling you to pray for leaders, and that's why. Because I can't carry this load, on my own. And you know this. This is not me griping. But I'm just saying, no one man can do that. And even those leaders, we've talked about the deacons. The deacons, what is the job of a deacon in church? Take care of the people and take care of the physical aspects, that are going on in the church. Now, does that mean that they are responsible for taking care of every single physical issue that comes up in the church? No, there'll be a leader in that area. So we have three deacons. That doesn't mean that our three deacons are supposed to do every physical job that needs to be done around the church. It just means they're the leaders in those areas. And as they lead out, maybe they'll ask you, hey, could you help us take care of this? Could you help us take care of that? And as those things are taken care of, they're going to bring the word back to me, and they're going to say, Pastor, these are some issues that came up, but we have these things taken care of, and everything's fine now. Just wanted you to be aware of it. And that's exactly how this is supposed to work. That's how a church is supposed to work. That's how these things are supposed to function. That you see the same thing in businesses that you are in or have been involved with. And it's just wise counsel that we find here given from God through Jethro to Moses. He says, share the leadership in verses 23 through 26. It says, if thou shalt do this thing and God command thee so, then thou shalt be able to endure, and all this people shall also go to their place in peace. So Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And they judged the people at all seasons. The hard causes they brought unto Moses, but every small matter they judged themselves. And Moses led his father-in-law depart, and he went his way into his own land. There is some great, great wisdom that we find here in these verses. Does anybody have a word or just maybe a comment, something that was brought to your mind that you'd like to share with us this evening on this thought? Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. We definitely do. Amen. Anybody else with anything? How can we implement something like this? Well, first of all, we need to pray about it, don't we? And pray for God to give wisdom and for God to provide. And I think that's the first step. But then as God does provide, then we need to let those people have, if we trust them, if they're scripturally, if they're doctrinally sound and all those different things and they're spirit-led, then we need to give them freedom to lead in the areas that God has placed them in. And, of course, freedom as far as they have the boundaries that we set for them, what they can, what we do expect and don't expect or whatever. But as long as they work within those boundaries, freedom to lead. And then, of course, I do believe that those leaders should report to the pastor and should bring those things to me. And, of course, any big issues, just like we found here, I think it should go to the pastor. And this is, you know, definitely not for any pastor to get out of work. But sometimes pastor's got more work than he can handle. And so, and that's for any leader. And I believe also in those areas, you know, if God was to lead there, that those people should have some people under them that help take, you know, take different responsibilities and take different roles. And, you know, things just work much smoother when you have it all set up and working together as it should. All right, anybody else with any questions, comments, anything on these verses? Now, I have two things after that I want to share with you very quickly, and then we're going to dismiss. Anybody with a word? Y'all have heard enough talking tonight, haven't you? All right, well, two things. Number one, not one of us can bear the load ourselves. I think this is a great lesson that we find from these verses. Not just for the pastor, but this is for the deacons, for teachers, for anybody in the church. Not one of us can bear all the responsibility alone. Some of you, maybe God has pushed on your heart, maybe He's placed on your heart that you need to be leading or you need to be working a certain area, but you're afraid that if you do that it's all going to wind up on you. Well, understand that you're not expected to handle all the load yourself, and you shouldn't be. And, I think that we definitely find that truth here. No one could bear the load ourselves. So what it means is that the whole church has to be working together. Every church member needs to be taking responsibility and needs to be involved in the work of the church at some level. And so I think that is a great truth we find here. Second of all, another thing that I found out of this is that sometimes God just places the right people with the right words at just the right time. And I think this is where Jethro fit into all this. Moses, I'm sure, was wearing himself out. Every time he turned around, people were complaining about each other, or they're complaining about why there wasn't any water or food, you know, and wondering when he was going to provide for all this. He just had too much on him. And at just the right time, Jethro shows up, and he has the right words to say, and Moses listens, and he follows that, and God bless. And sometimes in your life, you're going to be going through some struggles, you're going to be going through some issues, and God's just going to put the right people in the right place in the right time in your life, and maybe he'll speak through them to you. And I believe our encouragement tonight is to be like Moses. You know, Moses was a great leader, he's a powerful man, but he was the meekest among men as well, aside from Christ. The Bible talks about that. And, he didn't buck up against this advice, but it says that he humbled himself. Of course, he would have had to do that, and he listened to his father-in-law's wisdom and advice. He took it, and God blessed. So listen as God puts those people in your lives, as He places that advice or that encouragement or wisdom in your life, be willing to listen. The Proverbs talk a whole lot about that, about accepting counsel and taking, sometimes even rebuke if that comes at you, to listen to that rebuke, listen to that wisdom, and apply it to your own life. And so that's definitely, I believe, something God wants us to take home with us tonight. This missionary was, I believe he was one of those people that God placed in my life. I had just something we were talking about. There was a struggle that was going on with me and my life personally. Man, we started talking, and he just had exactly what I needed to hear. I've been thanking God for that as well. And so anyway, you know, like I said, sometimes he just puts those people right place, right time for us. And let's be watching for those and listening to how God may use them to speak to us. Any word before we dismiss tonight? All right, all minds clear? Clear as mud? All right. Let's dismiss in prayer. We're looking forward to Exodus chapter 19. Let's pray that God would help to apply these truths to our lives. And if God is speaking to your heart about any of this tonight, then I want to encourage you to spend some time talking to Him and ask for His leadership and guidance in your personal life.